You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. Time to take a look at your income tax return. Steve Schmidt, our guest, certified public accountant and a managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. Always happy to have him come by to talk with us. And he's busy time of the year for him, but he takes a little time to come out and answer your questions. And if you have one, please feel free to join in. If you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And anywhere else, it's toll-free at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Steve's got a little cold today. Better? Or?
Well, I picked it up over the weekend, so we'll see if we can make the whole show here.
All right. He may lose his voice sometime during the show, and if he does, he'll write the answers out
there
and I'll read them. What do we got new this year in, for 2006? There's some new things.
Yes, there are. What happened late in December, there was an extender's bill that was passed, and it impacted both businesses and individuals. The three most notable things impacting individuals are the extension of the tuition and fees deduction. Mm-hmm. That's up to $4,000. Then for educators, the $250 educator expense deduction was reinstated for 2 years, as was the sales tax deduction. The sales tax, you can either deduct Wisconsin income tax or your sales tax, one or the other, but not both. So not real important for Wisconsinites, but mm-hmm. Other states that don't have an income tax like Florida mm-hmm. is quite an important deduction.
So, yeah, it's a big deal if you live in Florida then.
That's correct.
Right. Well, Doug in Rice Lake has a question for you, so let's go right to Doug. Doug, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. I have a question on a tax home, and actually I have a small follow-up with the two. According to publication 46, I have a home in northern Wisconsin, but I work in southern Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I only work 10 months out of the year. So the one part of the publication says if it's a temporary job, then my tax home is still my home. But the other part says if I work here most of the year, then Platteville would be my tax home. So I'd like to know which it is.
Yeah. Do you work in Platteville each year?
This is my first year.
But, I mean, it's going to be a continuous...
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the better view there would be that Platteville, where you have your principal job, would be your tax home. And therefore, while you're living in and around Platteville working, your expenses would not be deductible, your living expenses.
Okay, but then it also says that my home that I have to maintain for my family... my portion of those costs would be deductible. So then my mortgage and my real estate taxes, I'm assuming, would be deductible for that part.
Right. Any taxpayer, regardless of whether they're in a business or not, can deduct mortgage interest expense, real estate taxes, charitable
No, not just interest. It actually says that I can claim my portion of the cost of maintaining that home, even though I'm not living there right now.
In order to deduct... home expenses as an employee, you have to be in a travel status.
Okay.
Your tax home is Platteville, so when you're in Platteville, you're not in a travel status.
Okay.
Therefore, those expenses aren't deductible. And then your second home up north, you're not in a travel status there. That's just a personal place where you wish to live.
Okay.
But let me give you an example. Let's say you regularly worked for University of Platteville, whoever it is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they gave you a 9-month assignment to do something at the University of Denver.
Okay.
And you were out there for 9 months, and then you came back after that assignment to Platteville. In that case, you're in a temporary job location, and then all your expenses, meals, lodging,
right.
Become a deductible employee business expense.
Okay, mm-hmm. Great. All right, and I am self-employed. Does that make any difference?
No,
okay.
Not from this purpose, but of course, your eligible business expenses go
sure.
on Schedule C, not Schedule A.
Correct. Correct. All right, great. Thanks for your help.
Yep, thanks, Doug, for calling. And on to Kay in Superior. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I have received my Wisconsin tax form, and as a spouse, my Social Security number is on the envelope. I have a letter from the Department of Revenue. What would your guest suggest? I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Sure. The same thing happened to my wife. She received a letter from the Department of Revenue indicating that, in her case, her package went to the post office with her Social Security number, but they did retrieve it before it was mailed out because the tax packet we got did not actually have her Social Security number on it. But read the correspondence that was included with the letter, and they will let you pay for a free credit monitoring service for a year. So why not take them up on that?
Sure, why not? Yeah.
You know, years ago, Social Security numbers were plastered all over, all the labels, but now with identity theft, it's become a barely significant issue. So hopefully nothing will run awry for you.
And take advantage of that opportunity then to have them monitor that for you for a year. Mary in Menominee, it's your turn now. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Morning.
My question is, and I don't know, maybe it's foolish, but there is a thread running on one of them, an email list that I'm on, about a telephone credit.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. What exactly is it, and how do you claim it?
Okay. Yes, there's a refund that may be claimed on 2006 tax returns for the federal telephone excise tax.
Yes.
And over the years, taxpayers have challenged the authority of the IRS to impose the tax. I'll just give you a little history since it's going to apply to everybody this year. And basically, there's a provision in the Internal Revenue Code that says that the IRS can impose a 3% tax on telephone services, local services, and then other services that are based in time and distance. While it's rare today that you are charged based on time and distance, so most long distance now is no longer subject to the excise tax, as and bundle services such as cell phones aren't subject to the excise tax. So the IRS earlier this year said, We give up, and we're going to stop fighting taxpayers, and we're going to grant a refund to everybody in the country who's paid the tax. And it's for a 41-month period running from March of 2003 through July of 2006. And after July, the IRS stopped collecting the excise tax on long-distance services and bundled services and a couple of others that we don't have to go into here. So for individuals, you can claim a standard amount, and if you claim one exemption, it's $30, two exemptions, it's $40, three exemptions, $50, and four or more exemptions, it's $60. You can also go back, and for individuals, and add up, get all your telephone bills, and add up the excise tax on the bundled services and long distance where it shouldn't have been imposed. For bills dated March of 2003 through July of 2006, and add up the excise tax. And if that's greater, you can claim the greater amount, but you need to file Form 8913. Also for businesses, which includes individuals that have a farm, a Schedule C, self-employed, or rental properties, if you have $25,000 or more of gross receipts, then you can use an estimation method. And under that method, you take all your bills from April of 06 when their excise tax was imposed, compute the excise tax, or add up the excise tax divided by the total bills, and let's say it comes out to 2.8%.
Okay.
Then you do the same thing for bills dated September of 06 when the excise tax wasn't imposed, and you do the same thing. So let's say you take your total excise tax divided by the total bills in September, and let's say that comes out to 1.3%. So I had 2.5 in April, 1.3 in September, so that's 1.5%.
Oh.
So then I add up all my telephone bills for those 41 months, multiply it by 1.5%, and then that's the credit that you're entitled to.
Out of business.
Subject to two limitations. The percentage, the 1.5% in my example, can never be more than 2%. And if you have more than 250 employees, it can't be more than 1%.
Hmm.
So for individuals, you can use the actual or the standard amounts. Or if you have a business, you can use the estimation method.
Where do you put that deduction then? Where does that go?
It's on page 2 of 1040. And there's a line for it. And let's see if I can find it here. It is line 71 on the regular form 1040. If you don't need to file a tax return, there's a special form. I think it's a 1040 EZT or something. I don't know exactly the name of it. But there's a form designed just for that purpose. So you can get your $20 back or $30 back, as the case may be.
I'm going to take the deduction, the standard.
The standard, yes. It's when you think, you know, if you have a $100 bill. What's that?
Phone bills for 2003, yeah. I don't have.
Yeah, let's say you have a $100 bill and, you know, $25, or let's say $20 is for local service and $80 is for long distance for some reason, that 3% is $2.40 a month. So how excited are you going to get about that?
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
And on to John in Madison. John, hello.
Hello. What I'm calling about is we have a 90-year-old mother that we moved to assisted living, and we sold her house, all her assets. But we were shocked to find that she had a dog collection that she did not keep any records for. That sold.
What was that, sir?
What kind of collection?
A doll collection.
Doll.
And oh, doll.
Sold for six figures, which we were shocked at an auction house. She didn't keep records of prices, but in her mind, she has essentially what she paid over the years.
Uh-huh.
Do we claim we are doing our taxes with power of attorney and all, and this is our first year in doing this, and it's, do we claim that, or does she, how do we?
Absolutely. Any
cost. Yes, I mean, we have no idea how to do it, other than her saying, I put in $115,000 in these over the years, but it was on the side, and she had no records.
That's your mother, right?
Yes.
And what year did her husband pass away?
20 years ago.
20 years ago, which was 1986.
Yeah.
Is she a Wisconsin resident?
She was Illinois, and we moved her here to Wisconsin, okay. So it's even more common.
I was looking for marital property with basis step-up of death for both spouses, but that's not going to be relevant. So, yes, you're limited to, unless her husband owns some of them, and they were included on his death tax return.
No, now, this was one of these things. I think she had a hobby on the side and never told how much he spent.
Right. You're limited. You know, it's the selling price less what she paid for them, and just have her do the best job she can to reconstruct what her cost is. And the difference should be reported on Schedule D as long-term capital gain.
Okay.
With no basis, the IRS can actually say basis is zero. I mean, there are cases there that support it, or that support that conclusion. But usually, if you do a reasonable job of reconstructing the cost, the IRS will grant you that. But without any documentation, they can take a hard line if they wish.
Could I give a follow-up question, which is, she lived 6 months in Illinois, and now she's in Wisconsin in assisted living. Does she have to file taxes? Can she just stay as an Illinois resident where her retirement is not taxed, but Wisconsin it is, or does she?
No, if you change your domicile where you live and intend to stay, then the residence reporting would change from Illinois to Wisconsin.
Okay.
Now, generally, Illinois is a more favorable state from a tax perspective.
Yeah.
That is, it's 3%. But on capital gains, Illinois has no special treatment on capital gains. And therefore, Wisconsin is actually a little bit better on long-term capital gains. The Wisconsin ordinary rate is 6.75%, but you only pay tax on 40% of long-term capital gains. So the Wisconsin rate's only 2.7 compared to Illinois' 3.0.
Hmm. So it's a little better that way.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good luck, John.
Thank you very much.
Good luck. Appreciate your call. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest, Steve Schmidt. We're talking taxes with him. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking taxes today with Steve Schmidt, who is a managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. Glad to have him along. Thank you for listening. And Eric in Superior, you are next. Hi, Eric.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a little trouble with my voice today. My question relates to the sale of my primary residence, and I'll give you just the brief history of it. I purchased two lots in a subdivision, built my house on one of them, and the house I had sold prior to that time was under the old regulation where I did pay capital gain on the sale of the home that I was leaving at that time. So then I reinvested the money as I was allowed to. But you can tell me if I did something wrong, but I bought two lots in the subdivision, built my house on one of the lots, and now when it's time for me to sell this house as my primary residence, I find that it is advantageous to me to sell the vacant lot. The market is down for houses, but someone wants to buy the vacant lot. So when I sell the vacant lot next to my house, will I owe capital gain on that appreciation, or is it better for me to hold off and find a buyer for the house with the vacant lot, you know, one sale, or have I already done something wrong?
No, if you sell the home and the lot, extra lot together, that would be viewed as the sale of a residence. But if you sell the lot separately, you have not sold your principal residence, and therefore you would have to pay tax on the gain from the sale of the lot.
And that's even if I sell them both in the same year. It's just that, this is the way I can find buyers.
I'm not sure about that. The IRS has some guidance out on that, and I just haven't had to apply it. But there may be a rule if you sell within a certain amount of time that the lot would be viewed as your residence as well. I want to think it's 2 years, but I'm not sure. I would need to do a little research on that.
Okay. I'm hoping it all goes this spring. But,
yes,
you know, this is the way that it's looking in the buyer's market that it is today. And, yeah, in fact, when I go to buy property now, I'm finding the same situation, that I'm interested in property and the people who want to sell the house that I don't want to buy have a vacant lot next to it. I'd like to buy the vacant lot. So they're going to be in the same situation as we all try to sell our houses.
Yes.
Any suggestions where I go for looking, or do I just need a professional?
Well, the IRS has a publication. I don't know the number, but if you go to irs.gov, there's a publication on the sale of principal residences.
Okay.
If not that, there certainly is one on capital gains. I don't use those publications generally, but
My
guess is that will comment on land sold in connection with the sale of a home.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And also, if I am subject to capital gain, basically, what is the rate of capital gain for something that I've held for 6 years or 7 years?
Okay. Wisconsin, I just mentioned, is 2.7%, and federal is 15%.
2.7 and 15.
Yes.
And may I deduct the real estate taxes I have paid on it all these years?
Real estate taxes are deductible as an itemized deduction. You cannot add those to your cost basis.
I can't add them to the cost basis.
And just, I should mention one thing. If a person owns and occupies they're a principal residence for 2 years before they sell, for the five-year period before
they
sell.
Which I have done.
Then you get to exclude up to $500,000 of gain on a joint return or $250,000 of gain on a single return.
Yes, I was aware of some of that, the basic regulation for that, and I'm just wondering whether it would apply to the lot, and I appreciate your answer. I will look into it.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Probably a lot of people in that situation. Darlene and Stevens Point, it's your turn. Hi, Darlene.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I live up here in Stevens Point now, and I've lived here a couple of years, and I still had my home in Evansville that finally closed in July. And the realtor said in my seller's closing statement that there were a lot of things on there I could deduct on my income tax, besides the taxes and the mortgage cost. Do you know what I could deduct off that?
The only thing you can deduct on Schedule A is the interest expense and the real estate taxes that were prorated. However, on the sale, in computing your gain, then you take usually the bulk of the other expenses and treat them as a selling expenses on the sale of the property, which will reduce your capital gain. For example, the commission you pay, the real estate transfer tax, recording fees, title insurance, all those sorts of costs are selling expenses and reduce the gain on sale, such that if your gain is more than what you could exclude under the maximums I just mentioned, the $250,000 or the $500,000, it'll reduce the amount on which you pay tax. But if your gain is less than that, those selling expenses effectively don't do you any good.
Okay. What do you mean by gain? I mean, I bought another house.
Yeah. Here's what I mean by gain. Let's say you bought that house for $150,000. Your selling expenses were $25,000, so that gives $175,000 of cost in the house and selling expenses. And then let's say you sold it for $250,000. The selling price of $250,000 less $175,000 results in a gain on the sale of that residence of $75,000. Since that's less than the $250,000 or $500,000, you wouldn't have to pay tax on it. And if your selling price is less than $250,000 or $500,000 on a joint return, you don't even have to report it on your tax return.
All right.
I think I understand. Thanks a lot.
Very good.
Thanks a lot for calling. Good description. Thank you for that, Steve. Patricia in McFarland. Hi.
Hi. My question concerns medical deductions. I know that drugs out of pocket come off that. My question mainly refers to the premiums. Can I deduct my basic premiums plus or without or for the Part D in Medicare?
Yes. In health insurance premiums, a limited amount of long-term care premiums on the federal return, Medicare B and Medicare D are all treated as medical expenses and get added to all your other out-of-pocket medical expenses, such as for drugs, doctors, dentists, glasses. And you add those all up, and if they exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, you deduct the excess.
Okay, thank you. That really covers it.
All right, thanks for calling.
Wisconsin has a separate subtract modification for long-term care insurance. So if you have paid long-term care premiums, you can deduct them as a limited amount on the federal return as an itemized deduction, but Wisconsin has an unlimited deduction as a subtraction from income. So it's a little bit better deal on Wisconsin than federal.
Let's go to Norm in New Auburn next. Norm, hello to you. Norm, are you there? Whoop, we may have lost Norm. All right, let's Norm? Nope, no Norm. Let's go to Jared in Trempealeau. Hi, Jared.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I worked for three different states this past year, and my question is, do I have to file for each state?
Yes, unless... Are you a Wisconsin resident?
Yes.
Okay. Wisconsin has reciprocity with three states, or five states, rather, I should say. Minnesota,
okay.
Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, and Michigan.
Okay. So I got Vermont and California.
Oh, okay. So those aren't relevant. So then, yes, usually a state, if you work in that in those states and you have more income than they would allow you to have with not filing, then you do need to file in those states.
Okay.
And then Wisconsin, on your Wisconsin return,
yep.
If you pay tax in those other states, if your income is high enough to pay tax,
mm-hmm.
You'll get a credit on your Wisconsin income tax return for the tax you actually pay to California and Vermont. Not the withholding, okay. But the actual liability on the return.
Okay.
And there's a Schedule OS you need to complete and file with your Wisconsin return.
Okay.
And then attach a copy of the California and Vermont returns to your Wisconsin return.
Okay.
And you will get credit for the other taxes you've paid. Therefore, you'll pay no more tax than if you only had to file in Wisconsin. However, you have the inconvenience and the cost of filing in two other states.
Yeah, absolutely. What about my federal?
Federal is just, it's the whole United States. It's the whole worldwide. You just report all your income and deductions on Form 1040.
Is there a special, it's not a special form or anything?
No.
Okay.
Multiple states presents no issue at all on the Form 1040.
Great. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Thanks for calling, Jared. If you'd like to join in, here's the number, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Talking about preparing your income tax returns today with Steve Schmidt. And let's go to Jeannie in Kewaskum next. Jeannie, hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi, I have a question about a SEP account. I haven't put anything in it in about 8 years.
Okay.
I'm 46 and I'm self-employed. And I want to switch it over to another kind of company. And when I switch it over, I know I'm supposed to go directly from one company to the next, but can I have more than one SEP account?
Sure. SEP is a simplified employee pension plan, and for our listeners, the funding vehicle for that is nothing but an IRA, okay? But you have a SEP wrapper, you have to adopt a SEP plan, which is usually 5305 SEP. That's a form number. But then when you make the contributions, it's in an IRA. So any provider, custodian of an IRA can provide your IRA vehicle for you. So a direct transfer would work. With respect to IRAs, you can do a rollover. You get the funds and roll them over within 60 days. That works as well.
Okay,
but I can't leave that fund alone and then start another one?
Certainly. Sure. Certainly. You can have multiple IRAs, not a problem.
Okay, you just bundle them together and make the deduction.
And you can put it all in. Let's say this, you're going to do a contribution this year, and say it's $3,000. You could put it all into your existing IRA. You could start a new IRA. You could split it into two IRAs. But, you know, whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm. As long as I know where all of those IRAs are.
Better know it.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
And the contribution has to be made on or before April 17th.
Okay. Marilyn in Green Bay, we turn to you next. Hi, Marilyn.
Hello. I would like to know if I can deduct interest paid to our village for a sewer and water assessment for 2006.
Let's see. It's on your principal residence.
Yes.
And as long as they have it secured, which I would bet they do, you probably meet the definition of home interest. I've never looked at that one, but I don't know why you wouldn't. It requires that it be the improvement or acquisition of a home,
yes,
which it is. And the other one is that there's a perfected security interest in the property. And I can bet that the city has their interest protected securely.
Yes.
And with that being the case, I would sure think that you would be able to deduct it, although I've never looked at that one.
Now, do I have to itemize to do that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get a Form 1098, mm-hmm, you should list that on a separate line on Schedule A. There's a line that says, you know, interest that's reported on Form 1098, and then there's another line, if you don't get a 1098, that you can list home interest.
Okay.
All right.
Fine. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And let's turn to Sarah in New Auburn next. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. I did concrete work. I was a secretary for a concrete company this year, and I never took payment because he's a personal friend. I never took payment, but we did pour a concrete slab for our garage. Now, the bill, the concrete bill, went to him and the concrete company. And we kind of worked it as a trade. Do I need to claim that amount as income?
Yes, you do.
Okay.
Yep, that was sure. I mean, barter income is income, and an employee is taxable both on the cash that they receive and the value, mm-hmm, of property received. So the value of the work done at your home certainly would be taxable income.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And let's go to Steve in Wausau. Steve, hello to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
There's something new's come up in our area here. Maybe you've heard about it. These where you, for elderly people, they buy a share in a new, condo situation, and they say you can, and to build it, there's interest, of course, on the loan. It's a HUD loan, and then of course there's real estate taxes because you own it. And they say you can write that off on your taxes, just like you would a home. But what if the person, I'm thinking this from my mother, if the person only has Social Security income, you know, not W-2, just, you know, what comes
out, right,
how would you possibly write off real estate taxes and interest from a bank loan, or, you know, from the share value of that?
Mm-hmm.
Of that? It's a new thing, and I'm just trying to get to the bottom of it if I can.
You're certainly entitled to deduct all your deductions, but if you don't have any income, the deductions don't do you any good, is what you're saying.
Well, I'm not sure if that's what I'm – I guess that's what I'm asking,
sure.
And is that how it would work?
Sure, exactly. That's right. So you add up all your mother's income or Social Security, and if, you know, her total income and half her Social Security is less than $25,000, none of that will be taxable. Mm-hmm. Interest, dividends, capital gains and losses, retirement income, whatever. And if that is quite small, then the itemized deductions for interest and taxes will not do you any good.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks for calling. Greg in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Greg.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got two questions, one hopefully really easy and one a little bit more detailed. But first question is, my father passed away last year in Michigan, and we sold his home. It just sold this year for about $60,000. So my question is, and I hope I'm right on this, will not have to pay a capital gains tax on that?
That's correct. At your father's death, the home – well, I shouldn't say – at your father's death, the home took a date-of-death value. Okay.
Right.
So unless there was substantial appreciation between his death and when you sold it, there would be no gain. So it's what you sold it for net of your selling expenses compared to the value when your father passed away, the difference would be gain or loss.
Okay. And then second, well, I have another question, three questions, I guess. But on that home also, the property taxes have been paid last year. He died early in the year. I'm assuming it's in my sister's name. She can deduct those property taxes, interest, I'm assuming?
The owners
of property taxes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the owners of the property, when they're paid, get the deduction. So if it was in the estate would get it. If the house is in your sister's name, she would get the deduction, whomever owned the house.
Okay, good. All right, and then second question is, my wife and I are looking to buy some land, and we have a fairly sizable debt right now that we'd like to get rid of before we do this. I have a 401k from another company years and years ago that would, even after paying the federal and state taxes and the penalty, would probably clear that debt. I know that's probably not the best idea, but my question really is there any provision to not pay that penalty if it's going towards debt or anything of that nature?
Boy, I'm not aware of any exception for your circumstance. You could take a look at Form 5329 in the exceptions to the penalty, but I don't think you're going to find one.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I guess I'd think long and hard before I took my money out of a 401k plan to pay off a debt and buy some property. Mm-hmm. But, if the performance on the property is substantially better over the years than what the performance of your investment assets in the 401k, I suppose that would turn out to be a good economic deal.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the only thought there just is that carrying that kind of a debt load to making the debt payment and the land payment might get to be a burden. So
sure.
I'd like to get even at the cost of a penalty and everything else. I mean, we both have 401ks that are pretty healthy from current jobs.
Yes.
So this is a 15 years ago one that we cashed out. From a different company.
Sure.
Anyway.
That becomes a broader financial planning issue than maybe a tax issue. But I'm other than the tax issue is, yes, you do need to pay the tax in the 401k and a premature withdrawal penalty if you're not 55 or 59 and a half, depending upon your circumstances.
Yep. Okay. Thank you so much for your time.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Greg. And Heidi and Madison, your turn. Hi, Heidi.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Good. I have, one quick question. My mother is in a nursing home. She's 84, and she lived in Michigan, and then we moved her here to Wisconsin. She's on Medicaid. She also has a retirement income from my father, who's passed away, and Social Security. But all of her income, except $40 a month, goes back to pay for the nursing home. Do I need to file taxes for her?
What you need to do is add up the total gross income, and if the gross income exceeds the filing requirement, you need to file even if there's not a liability. And the what you would have would be her personal exemption is $3,300 on a for a single person. She's also gets another $1,250 for being over 65, and then the standard deduction is $5,150. So if you add those up, you get 10, 4, 6, 7, what, $9,700. So if her total gross income, not including Social Security, is more than $9,700, she needs to file a return.
Oh, okay, even though there's no liability.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I would have to do that for both Michigan, Wisconsin, and...
I was giving you the federal filing requirements.
Oh, okay.
Wisconsin is different than federal, and I would expect Michigan maybe as well. So you need to look at the various states. And if you're part-year Wisconsin resident because you moved in 2006, then you file one NPR instead of Form 1. But just get the instructions and look at the filing requirements there.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. Yes, and my last question is quit my job last year, so I only worked for about a month last year. And in doing our taxes this year, I find that we're getting almost every dime of taxes that we paid back. We're getting over a $10,000 refund. Can that be accurate?
Without knowing all your items of income and deduction, I really couldn't comment on that. But
it could be. I suppose you're filing jointly, and your husband then would have made quite a bit more money than you made.
Right, and we've got two kids, so I mean, home mortgage and all that stuff. So it just seems odd. I mean, I did it through, two different tax software programs, and it came out the same. So
wow, excellent.
Yeah, it's just I just want to make sure I'm not
sure. You're probably benefiting from child tax credits and things like that. So that could very well be the case.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. And Josie in Green Bay. Hello to you,
Jose.
Sorry.
Good question. I just wanted to ask if lawyer fees are considered a deduction.
It depends what the nature of the work done was. If it's for producing income or employment related it is. If it's for a personal nature, it may not be. So it just depends. If you can tell me what you paid the lawyer's fees
for. It was
for
immigration.
No, I don't think that would be, because that's not an income-producing activity.
Okay. Thank
All right,
you.
Jose. Thank you very much for calling. And for you get a lawyer to fill out a will for you, something like that, that's, I assume, not deductible.
Well, there's at least two components to it. Usually when you do a will, a big part of the reason you're there is because of tax issues, estate tax issues and so mm-hmm. forth. So to the extent that the legal fee relates to tax advice, tax planning, that part is deductible. The drafting of the will itself is personal in nature and not deductible. Mm-hmm. So you got to take a look at, you know, what the fees went for.
All right.
And most lawyers will, if they don't automatically send you something at the end of the year, if you call them back, they will give you a statement or let you know what part of the fees was for tax planning and advice.
All right, let's go to Marilyn in Washburn. Marilyn, hi to you.
Hi, thanks. I didn't get the whole equation on the situation where if you sell property of a deceased parent mm-hmm. and what the capital gains might be. Do you mind repeating
no,
that?
No, I'd be happy to. Is when an individual dies, property
right.
gets a date of death value. Let's go back to our example in the Michigan house. Let's say that he said the house was worth $60,000. So let's say the date of death value was 60. Let's say his father bought that house 30 years ago for $10,000.
Okay.
If dad sold the house while living at for $60,000, he'd have a $50,000 capital gain. $60,000 less 10 cost is $50,000 a gain.
Right.
However, at the date of death, you get a date of death value basis for the home. So in this case, it's now worth 60. Basis got stepped up at date of death to 60, gain or loss is zero.
Ah.
I should just mention Wisconsin is a community property state.
Right.
We call it marital in Wisconsin, marital
yes.
property.
Mm-hmm.
If one spouse dies and the property held by the spouses is marital property, then you get a basis step up in both halves of the property, not just the decedent's half.
Hmm.
Oh.
So let's go back to the example.
Yeah.
Let's say you and your husband paid $10,000 for that house many years ago, and then your husband passed away, and you own the house as Wisconsin marital property. He owns half. You own half as marital property. He passes away. He owns half. You get basis step up in his half for 30, but we also get basis step up in your half of the other 30, so you got basis step up to $60,000, a very advantageous rule
very.
For Wisconsin.
So then if the surviving child were to sell the home at the date of death value, there would be no capital gains.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. And we'll take some more calls. Just want to remind you, Steve Schmitz, our guest, certified public accountant and a managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Answering questions about your tax situation today with Steve Schmidt. Don in Madison is next, so we'll go right to Don. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I received a Social Security statement. I'll be 67 in a few weeks. It said something about if my income – well, my question really is, my wife is still employed. She's not quite 60, and she makes a good income. I'm wondering if I'm better off, or if we're better off, filing separately or jointly to avoid any excess tax.
Usually, filing jointly results in the least tax, but not always. And all I can tell you is, you just need to compute it each way.
Mm-hmm.
And make the determination. There are limits when you file separately. Certain things aren't available, or the amount of adjusted gross income on which you have to compute your Social Security tax, they're less on a married separate return than they are on a joint return. And therefore, if your wife has high income and you have low income, my premonition is you're going to pay less tax on the joint return. But the only way to know for sure is to crunch the numbers. I had a situation not too long ago where we did the calculations, and much to my surprise, the married filing separate actually did result in a lower tax. Not much, but that's more the exception than the norm, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, and I had a small income. I'm a retired insurance agent, but I really don't get what people think, and and that's not taxable, or is it?
What are you referring to?
Well, I guess there, once you're 65, I guess that you can earn. There's no penalty. You don't have to return any Social Security, I guess.
Oh, that's a different issue. Yeah, right. There's earnings limits at certain ages on Social Security, and if you earn more than that, you have to write.
Okay, well, I'm not there.
Yeah, okay.
I wish I was. I'd love to pay a lot of taxes and make a lot of money. All right, thanks very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Roy in Madison, your turn. Hi, Roy.
Hi, thanks for taking this call.
Sure.
My wife and I are residents of Wisconsin. Previously, we lived in Illinois, and my wife was an educator. We moved, and she earned all her income there. Now she's receiving a pension in Wisconsin. It also has the accumulation under, I believe it was an IRA. She's receiving in Wisconsin. All this was earned in Illinois. Now, I understand we have to pay state income tax in Wisconsin based on the Wisconsin race. Now, we talked about reciprocity. A Wisconsin teacher moving to Illinois, or anybody moving to Illinois, would not have to pay state income tax. Also, in Wisconsin, the state teacher's retirement income is not taxed. Now, am I correct in paying this tax? Or is there...
Yes. The reciprocity applies to work for wages. Okay, so if you are a Wisconsin resident and work in one of the five states I mentioned earlier in the program, then you don't pay tax to that state. Does not apply to retirement benefits. Wisconsin has exclusions for certain retirement benefits, such as U.S. military. If you were a member of the Wisconsin State Teachers System on or before December 31st, 63, there are some exclusions, but I'm not aware of any exclusion in your particular situation. So you're paying tax on the Illinois retirement in Wisconsin certainly sounds correct.
Mm-hmm. Should we consider trying to file separately on her becoming a resident of Wisconsin, Illinois?
I don't think that would be worthwhile, but you could certainly push the numbers to see if it resulted in less tax.
Probably not, but you could give it a try.
Right.
Good luck, Roy. Thank you for calling. And Christy in Phillips, you're next. Hi, Christy.
Hello there, and thank you very much for your program and all your information today.
Thank you.
My question for you is, my son just purchased his father's home about 5 months ago. July of 06. He's in construction business, has been for a couple of years. The garage is completely used for his shop, and then there's a room in the house that that he uses for his office. I know in the past, whether federal or Wisconsin, there's been issues about trying to claim office space in your home. Can you give me any advice on these particular spaces that he's claiming and how it would work for his taxes?
Sure. Your son has his own business?
Yes.
Okay. And the issue in your son's situation is the old rule had to be it was a principal place of business. And for construction, your principal place of business is where you build things, mm-hmm. not your home. Mm-hmm. But some years ago, that little problem was rectified. And if you manage a business from your home, that's good enough now. Where in some years ago, that wasn't. So
okay.
And it sounds like your son would meet that requirement. The other one is that the part used for business has to be used regularly and exclusively for the business. You can't use it for the business and watch TV in the same room. I mean, you need a separate room, regular and exclusive. If you meet those tests, then you should get IRS Form 8829.
Okay.
And complete that. And that'll walk you through computing the home office deduction.
All okay, right. For both the garage and the
sure.
room.
Sure, sure. That's
wonderful.
Right.
You've been extremely helpful, as everything else you've said today. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Christy. And Tim in Junction City, it's your turn now. Hi, Tim.
Good morning. I have a quick question for you. We've put money in the UTMAs for our daughters, and now the oldest is using the money. So we've transferred from a growth fund into a fixed rate, and I received a 1099-B. Do I have to fill out a 1040, or can I still use a quicker form than that to file for her?
All I can tell you, I mean, basically our clients pretty much use Form 1040 or our computer automatically picks it. But if you just go to the IRS.gov and they have all the forms out there, 1040EZ, 1040A, and at the beginning of each of those packages, that there's a little section that says who can use this package or this form. And it lists all the things that you can have or not have. And you know, if it's you can't use the EZ, you got to use the A. If you can't use the A, you got to use the regular 1040. But it'll tell you. But I don't know those off the top of my head.
You know, a schedule, I read something about filling out Schedule D.
Yes, you will need a D.
And okay, and that might restrict me to 1040. But over the years, we've filed, and the reason having those accounts was to get under the income limit. Mm-hmm. Or dividends, and the 1099 shows a gain now, and will that work out in Schedule D? What she's going to end
you,
up?
You might have two types of income in the report. If there was dividends paid during the year, you might have ordinary dividends that could be qualified dividends subject to the 15% rate. You might have some just ordinary dividend income not subject to the 15% rate, and then you might have long-term capital gain dividends from the mutual fund. And in addition to that, when you sold the mutual fund shares, you'll have a gain or loss to compute on the sale of the shares on Schedule D.
Okay, it was transferred within the same company. Is that
no, I mean, if I go out of, you know, a stock fund into a bond fund, that's a taxable sale.
It is, okay.
Yes, it is.
It's getting a little more complicated for me right along here.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Tom in Fitchburg, hello to you. Tom, are you there?
Oh, this is Bob.
Oh, Bob. Okay, Bob, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, I have a question. I'm a carpenter, and during the course of the year, I'll work on several different job sites, traveling from my house to the job site. And I've heard different conflicting stories from guys on the job about being able to deduct the mileage from the house to the job site and going back home again. What is the actual truth on that?
Let me look that up, because that's not one I know off the top of my head. But we've got a break coming up here at the top of the hour. And
look that one up.
Yeah, I know there's IRS guidance on that one. I know many other situations, but I don't know your particular one off the top of my head. My guess is you're not eligible to deduct that, because that's commuting from home to the job site is just commuting. But let me, I think I can look that up.
So stay listening. Stay listening.
Sure. And we'll answer that after the break.
We'll answer that right after the break. And let's take a look at Rick now in Sturgeon Bay. What's on your mind, Rick?
Hi. Last year I filed Form 1040 on paper. They were the paper forms that I downloaded off the internet and filled out on the computer. And this year we have not yet received a tax booklet from the state. And I was wondering if I would be in the group that had our Social Security numbers exposed.
Boy, I have no way of knowing that. My wife, you know, was one of those, and she just got her package last weekend. I think it was last Saturday is when hers came.
So a little more patience than
Yes. So, you know, if they had a reprint, they probably couldn't do them all at once. So it may be coming yet.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling. And Richard in Jackson County, your turn. Hi, Richard.
Good morning. I have a question. Both my parents passed away this summer, and they had deeded the house to myself and sisters several years ago. And they kept the life estate on the house, and we have a question. What basis can we use? Can we use date of death because of the life estate?
Yes. You're getting involved into a little bit more complex situation, but generally, if they maintained a life estate, there's a couple of Internal Revenue Code sections. I'll throw them out, like 2036, 2038. The property usually would be included back in their estate, because they've retained rights to use the property, and that would generally get you a date of death basis for property such as that.
Okay, forms 2036 and
2038. Those aren't forms. Those are Internal Revenue Code sections that have those special rules, retained interests and so forth.
2036 and 2038.
Yes.
Okay. Also, one more thing. We had to cash a life insurance policy to pay for nursing home care.
Mm-hmm.
And now I got a 1099 from the insurance company saying that there was a gain of like $6,500 over the years. Do we have to file? I mean, she hasn't
they hadn't filed income taxes for years, and
you just need to add up all their gross income,
okay.
And
including Social Security.
Well, generally not. No. Mm-mm.
Okay.
So they were both living in 2006. So your filing requirement would be 6,600 plus 2,000 plus 10,300. So whatever that's
okay,
about
well,
18,000, something like that.
They didn't come anywhere close to that. So the 1099s, we can just kind of ignore them then.
That would be right.
Very good. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have some more callers online. You can join in, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. We'll take a quick break for the news, and then we'll be back with Steve Schmidt from RSM McGladrey. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Talking your taxes now and your tax returns with Steve Schmidt, certified public accountant and a managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. And Tom, and well, maybe we should go back to that other caller first. We're still working on that.
Yes, I brought a master tax guide, and it did not answer the question. So
we'll
see if we can't get an answer here.
Tom in Fitchburg, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Is tax on Social Security disability taxable, or is income?
Well, you take all your Social Security benefits, including disability, and throw them into the hopper and go through the calculations. If your income and half of Social Security is less than $25,000, none would be taxable on a single return. If you file a joint return, if half your Social Security and your other income is less than $32,000, you will not pay any tax on the Social Security benefits.
Okay. Good luck, Tom. Thank you for calling. And let's go to Kelly in Racine next. Kelly, hello.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm a single mom, and I lost my job at the beginning of last year, and I decided to go back to school to retool for a new career. And I got financial aid. I'm getting grants and student loans. And I'm getting forms from the college about the grants, and I'm not exactly sure which tax form to use. I don't know exactly what I do with that. And also I heard there was some sort of a credit for being a student, and I don't know anything about it.
Yes. Without knowing your actual forms, it's hard for me to be specific. But, you know, if you get a W-2, that shows some taxable wages, likely taxable. Loans, of course, would not be taxable because you're going to need to pay them back. There's a limited exemption from income for scholarships if you meet those. On the deduction side and the credit side, there's two different things that you might take advantage of on the federal side. There's a tuition and fees deduction of up to $4,000 on the federal return. And so that might be of interest to you. Also, there are education credits. There is the HOPE scholarship, or there's the HOPE credit, which is up to $1,650. And that only applies the first 2 years of school, and you can only take it for 2 years. And if you're not eligible for that, there is the lifetime learning credit, which is 20% of the first $10,000 in tuition and fees. So those are the federal, some of the federal breaks on education, the deduction and the credits. Wisconsin also has a tuition deduction for schools basically in Wisconsin and Minnesota, post-high school level. And the maximum deduction for 2006 is $4,536.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling, Kelly. Bernadette in Eau Claire, your turn now. Hi, Bernadette.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't have a long-distance service, and I was wondering about that telephone excise tax credit. I do use a phone card a lot, and I was wondering if I could take the credit on my income tax forms.
Yes, anybody is eligible to take the credit on their tax form, and it's based on the number of exemptions that you're entitled to claim for yourself and your dependents.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Thank you. And on to Evelyn in Madison. Hi, Evelyn.
Credit on their tax.
Evelyn, you want to turn down your radio? Evelyn, are you there?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Turn your radio down. That'll help you.
Okay. Hi. Okay, what I wanted to find out is my husband died 2 years ago. How long do I have to save his tax papers? That was my first question.
Normally, you should keep tax papers for 4 years. Federal has a 3-year statute of limitations. Wisconsin has 4. So items supporting your income and deductions keep for at least 4 years. There are certain things that you might want to keep permanently, such as, you know, items buying property, things like that. But
What happened is that when we were married, we both had our own. We had prenups, and I had bought my house, and he moved in with me. But when he died, he didn't leave a will. And so we had a big mess with his stuff. But he had a daughter from a marriage before that. Mm-hmm. So I would still need to save all of his old papers.
Just within the 4-year period, in case there's an audit.
Okay. The other question I have is.
Oh, by the way, you know, if there was a death tax return filed, such as a Form 706 or Wisconsin estate tax, keep those documents permanently.
Okay. Yeah. We got those from. It was quite a battle, but we got those. I have those from my attorney.
Okay. Very good.
And I'm on disability. I have been on disability for several years, but disability or Social Security and my husband's pension, part of my husband's pension, which I make about $2,400 a month. This will be my first year on how much of that is taxable?
Well, you need to take a look at the 1099-R you get for the pension benefit, the retirement benefit. That will tell you how much is taxable. And then with respect to Social Security, you just need to go through there's some worksheets in the tax package where you need all your other items of income and then the Social Security benefits to see how much, if any, of your Social Security is taxable. So just, you know, fill out the Form 1040 and then go to the worksheets for the Social Security benefits and see whether any of the Social Security will be taxable to you.
Would any of the taxes that I pay on my house be? I wouldn't be able to use any of that.
If you itemize your deductions, then the real estate taxes you pay, charitable contributions, medical expenses, home mortgage interest, all those items can be deducted on Schedule A.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. And those would have to be greater than the standard deduction.
Right. And if the standard deduction, if you're single and over 65, would be
$6,400. So if that amount is greater than $6,400, go ahead and itemize.
Right.
Jill in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Jill.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Kind of a good segue there into the standard deduction. My husband and I don't have a mortgage payment anymore. Our house is paid off, and so we generally don't itemize anymore on our tax return, and we take the standard deduction. We have quite a significant amount of mutual funds that we inherited from his mother and father, and we, you know, some years they do quite well with capital gains, but we unfortunately don't know what those distributions are until late in the year. And so what I've been finding in those years where we've had good returns and capital gains on those investments is that I'm getting hit with, you know, somewhat minor penalties when I file my taxes because I didn't estimate enough taxes throughout the year. And I guess my dilemma is how would I possibly know how well my investments are going to do and to know what to estimate? Is there any way around that dilemma?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
The IRS doesn't expect you to pay tax earlier in the year if your income comes late in the year. And there's an annualization exception. Basically what you do is you compute your income for each quarter, determine how much tax you owed for that quarter, and that's the amount you need to pay. So if you have all your income comes late in the year, what you can do is make a fourth quarter payment in January and then get Form 2210 and go through the annualization exception to the underpayment penalty. And that'll mitigate your penalties for you.
And when do I use that 2210?
Basically, is if your current year withholding and estimates do not equal at least 90% of your tax liability for the current year?
Okay.
Or 100% of your liability for the prior year?
Okay.
Then you'll want to get the Form 2210. And if your income is more than $150,000, the prior year exception is 110% of the prior year, not 100%.
Okay. Okay, that helps. So, I just wasn't sure how to deal with it.
The annualization calculation, basically what you do is you compute your income deductions for each quarter through March, through May, through August, and you go through the tax calculations. So it's a little bit of work. And so if you're only talking about a $20 penalty or something, I'm not sure it's worth the work. But if you're talking $100, then it's probably worth the extra work.
Okay. And if I've already paid my fourth quarter estimated taxes, is there any way to add to that now that I've got some sense of what the capital gains
are?
Sure.
You could make another estimate, and you would just owe the underpayment penalty from January 16th or 17th, whatever the due date was, through the date you make the payment.
Okay.
So instead of it running through April 15th, if you don't file your return until April 15th, it'll
okay,
cut it off when you make the payment.
Okay, great. Thanks for your help.
The IRS will take your money.
Yeah, they will. They are glad to do it. Jack in Kenosha, it's your turn. Hi, Jack.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for such wonderful information. This last year, I did a lot of energy-saving things to my home. I increased the insulation by a great deal, put in a proper fire door between my home and my garage, and put in a whole new set of energy-efficient windows. My heating and air person told me that I should be able to get quite a bit of tax break for that. Is that true? Also, one other question. For part of the labor, I didn't pay for that until actually after the new year, about $1,000. Can I take that off next year's taxes?
You've got a lot of questions there. And starting with 2006, there are, for individuals, multiple energy type credits that are available. You should get new form 5695, and the instructions thereto will guide you through what you're entitled to. I'll just briefly talk about a couple of the credits here. There's a 10% credit for the cost of new materials only, materials, not materials and labor, for items such as insulation, caulking and weather stripping, exterior windows, and exterior doors. There's also a weird thing, certain metal roofs that have certain type of pigment on are also eligible, not usually real prevalent in our area.
Okay.
So those items, you get a 10% credit of the cost of the materials.
Okay.
If you replaced windows, however, you cannot count more than $2,000 for window replacements. So the maximum credit on windows would be $200, all right?
Okay.
Then there's also 100% credit for the cost of materials and labor for certain residential energy property expenditures. New furnaces, main house circulating fans, heat pumps, air conditioners, and water heaters. All of those have to meet certain energy standards, which you'll have to be certified by the manufacturer where you bought the property.
Okay.
And the maximum amount for a furnace is $150, the fan is $50, and all the others is $300 that I listed. And both credits cannot be more than $500 in total, the 10% credit and the 100% credit amounts. So it's quite limited.
Yeah.
All right, and it's really convoluted, and I can't believe we put this much complexity in our tax code for an insignificant dollar amount. It makes me mad.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these things are limited to $50. It's just not worth dealing with.
Yeah.
Okay.
But at any rate, and then there's also another credit for like solar and photovoltaic, that sort of stuff, which is 30% of up to a couple $1,000s, which...
Yeah.
But
what about my question for the check that I paid for labor since the beginning of the year? Will I be able to use that 2007 tax?
Basically, my recollection and the Form 5695 instructions comment on that. It's based on when you place the item of service, a property in service, not when it's paid for. So if what it was done and complete, that was placed in service, and I believe you get to count that in the year that it was placed in service. That's the year you take the credit, okay, not necessarily the year you pay. It's
year.
Placed in service.
Okay.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Carol in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Carol.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I appreciate your taking my call. This has been a point of major confusion for me. I did some work with an investment company, and in return, they sent me a 1099-B, which is titled Proceeds from Barter and Exchange of Stock. I'm at work, so I don't have the form in front of me. I have no idea where to enter this information on my form.
Sure. A 1099-B reports to you the selling price of securities such as stocks and bonds. Usually the 1099 will report the selling price net of commissions. So let's say they sold something for $10,000 and had a commission of $200. It would report a selling price of $9,800. You need to take the $9,800 and report that on Schedule D as a selling price, and then you get to offset the selling price by your cost of the security that was sold, and that difference will get you a gain or loss to be reported on Schedule D.
All right.
Now, there's nothing. It lists the sales price.
Right.
And it lists the amount of proceeds.
And the date
which
sold.
Which isn't a heck of a lot.
Yeah.
And, but I have no date. Date of purchase, date of sale.
Okay. You'll have to go back to your records on the when you purchased the security and get the purchase confirmation for that information. Or if you used, you mentioned you worked with some investment people, go back to them and they can provide you with that information.
Yeah, they should be able to get that. Or they will be able to give you
sure.
that. Good luck, Carol. Thank you. And let's go to another Carol, this one in Hudson. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. First of all, my husband and I just recently retired, and I am wondering, the only income we have is 1099, you know, like R, and dividends and interest. Can I contribute, or can we contribute to IRAs, or do you have to have W-2 income?
You have to have earned income to contribute to IRAs.
And the earned income means?
Is salary, wages, self-employment income, income from, you know, being an active farmer. Something from labor.
Okay, so the answer to that is definitely no. Then.
Right.
All right, then the second question, since we've recently retired, and what we're doing is depleting our savings first. So our only income is just a small pension amount and whatever we receive, you know, from interest or dividends when we've sold things. What's kind of the limit level where I don't even have to file taxes?
Right. We did this before, and it's your standard deduction plus your personal exemptions, which is $6,600, plus the $2,000 amount if you're both over 65, $1,000 each. So that comes out to about $18,900. If you go into both the federal filing instructions and the Wisconsin filing instructions, early in the instructions, there's a little section that says who must file, and it walks you through it based on your filing status, the number, how, your age, mm-hmm. and so forth. So Wisconsin is a little bit different than federal, but both of those are available online. You can go to irs.gov, or the Wisconsin Department of Revenue has a website out there as well.
Okay, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. We received an email from Elizabeth who said she got a settlement for injuries received in a car accident. Does this have to be claimed as income?
Okay. Recoveries for physical personal injury are exempt from tax. So if the award was because she was physically injured in the car accident and she's receiving compensation for that, that is not taxable. Let's say that she also got reimbursed for some medical expenses that she deducted in a prior year. If she did deduct the medical expenses, then that part would be taxable.
Okay. Rich in Sauk City, your turn now. Hi, Rich.
Yes. We're heading down to Katrina, Mississippi, Biloxi, Mississippi, with a church group to spend a week down there and to help out. And my wife and I, we're going to fly down and then spend another week more of a vacation for us.
Sure.
So, and then fly back, and my daughter's driving down. So now, how, you know, that flight, and what's all deductible and something like that as a contribution?
Well, you said it was it vacation or was it for charitable work?
1 week is for charitable work and 1 week is for vacation.
Right.
Yeah, I can't answer that. You know, from a business perspective, I could answer it if the trip is primarily business. Then the airfare there and back is deductible as a business expense, but then the time you spend on vacation isn't deductible. I've not looked at a situation that you're commenting on, so I can't speak with any authority on that.
Okay.
But generally, out of pocket expenses for charitable work is deductible. Also, your daughter, if she's driving down there for charitable work in connection with Hurricane Katrina,
and they're not staying over; they're driving back.
There's a higher mileage rate. Normally, you get 14 cents a mile for charitable mileage, but for work in connection with Katrina, it's 70% of the regular business rate, which I think that makes that 32 cents per mile for 2006.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. And Pete in Wisconsin Dells, hello to you.
Hi there. I recently watched a movie called America by Aaron Russo, and the movie makes the claim that there's no law requiring Americans to file a tax return, and I find this really hard to believe. I was wondering if you could comment on the film and also if you could just kind of clearly tell everyone where we can find the law that clearly requires Americans to file a tax return.
Okay.
Don't you believe the movie? Wisconsin and federal IRS, U.S. has its Title 26 of the United States Code contains the Internal Revenue Code and also the 16th Amendment. So, but I don't deal with tax protesters, so we'll just leave that question sit right there.
Okay, but you pay taxes.
I sure do.
And you need to, well, you pay taxes if you make a certain amount of income.
That's correct.
Yeah, otherwise, forget it. And Michelle in Reedsburg, quick question from you.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because I have a 14-month-old son, pardon me, at home, and we flex plan out $5,000 worth of daycare, but our daycare costs are far above that. I was just wondering, may I deduct the difference on my taxes?
How many children do you have?
I have one right now and one due maybe tomorrow.
Congratulations. with one, you're not going to get any more.
Okay.
With two, you can count up to $6,000 expenses, and you don't get a deduction, you get a credit. And you need Form 2441 to compute that credit.
Form 2441.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Thank you very much.
All right. Good
bye-bye.
Luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, on that happy note, another one on the way and gets at least $5,000exclusion.
Exclusion. And then next year she can get a credit on another $1,000. So congratulations.
Congratulations.
The miracle of life.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks very much.
You are welcome. My pleasure.
Look forward to your next visit. Steve Schmidt, our guest today, certified public accountant and a managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. And he'll be back again, and we'll talk with him one more time. And thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.